And don't get me started on my father, Mr. Personality. If you ask me, he could use a good stern talking to as well. Dad, how about sometime this week, just for kicks, you try making eye contact with me? Would that be so painful? And how about you ask how my day was, and then actually listen while I'm telling you? Here's some sample questions you can try until you get good at this. Son, what did you learn in school today? How's the drumming going? Are you at all worried that your mother and brother have disappeared into thin air and nobody's telling you thing one about what's going on with them? How about them Yankees? I think they might win the series this year. Any supposed father who doesn't even address his son, say, once a day, isn't even a father, in my opinion. So thanks for being my sperm donor, Pop. Oh, and then there's my egg donor. Why hasn't she checked in with me this week? Am I so drastically unimportant? Is Philadelphia such a remote region of the planet that her cell phone won't work? Also, has she not noticed that there are these things called pay phones that one can use for long-distance communication when all else fails? Geez, she could have sent a pigeon with a message banded to its leg and it would have gotten to me by now. Bang on a log, send me a smoke signal, something! Finally, there's Mr. Raccoon Face himself, Jeffrey. I'm sure that by now his face is looking better. Whatever little virus he had that gave him the fever is gone, and he's thoroughly enjoying his steady diet of high-fat, high-sugar street vendor food that he doesn't even have to microwave for himself. Unlike his heroic older brother, who is gradually dying of freezer-burned food poisoning. By now, he probably has every single nurse there wrapped around his finger, waiting on him hand and foot, rushing over to get him the remote control for his 300-channel satellite TV so he doesn't have to exert himself. Plus, all the nurses probably look like older, even better-developed versions of Renee Albert. And they're scurrying about, fluffing Jeffrey's pillows while I'm stuck here getting lectured daily by Annette just because I'm skipping an assignment here and there while the rest of my family is on vacation. You can see how folding the pages down was a good call on my part. The climax of the week actually came that afternoon. It was an all-city jazz band rehearsal day, and when I got to the high school, I found out that Brian was at home sick. Because of that, I got to play the drum set for an hour and 40 minutes straight. I was smoking, too. I always play well when I start out in a bad mood for some reason. Plus, I had been practicing so much that my wrists were just super quick. We played through some of our usual repertoire, like the theme from this old 1970s TV show called Barney Miller, some old jazz standards from the 1940s, and a Disney medley, which was actually far, far cooler than it sounds. Then we got into one of the new Latin pieces, a Dizzy Gillespie song called Manteca. Without two drummers, I had to play crazy fast to make the percussion part sound full enough. My right foot was pounding out accents, my left foot was clicking the hi-hat cymbals on beats 2 and 4, my right hand was going back and forth between the cowbell and a crash cymbal, and my left hand was flying from the snare drum to the tom-toms and back. Suddenly, a rare and amazing thing happened to me. I was in the zone. You know how baseball players sometimes talk about games when the ball seemed to be coming at their bats in slow motion, looking like a gigantic freeze-frame cantaloupe just waiting to be pounded? That's how this felt. Like I could do no wrong. I was so far up inside the beat that I wasn't thinking at all. My body just did everything perfectly, almost by itself. Mr. Watrous, who usually grades papers while a student conducts us through practice, stopped what he was doing to watch me. I could see a huge grin on his face, but I wasn't affected too much by that until I remembered it later. I was just grooving on drummer autopilot. Then Renee walked in to visit her boyfriend, Biff, the guitar wonder. She must have come straight from varsity cheering practice. She was one of only 3 8th graders who got to practice with the high school squad because she was wearing her uniform. I hope to God she had been watching for a while before I noticed her, because as soon as I looked up, the shock of seeing her there, wearing only small amounts of lycra and spandex and looking right at me, knocked me out of the zone. Far out of the zone. As in, ooh, Pez, you dropped a stick right in the middle of a song, and it went tumbling across the room at about 90 miles an hour, and it smashed into the bell of some senior's trumpet, and who knew brass was so flimsy anyway? By the way, the sound of a high school jazz band falling apart in mid-tune while one of the trumpet players is screaming at the drummer at the top of his lungs and the piano player is in the throes of a mad laughing fit is just not something you want to hear. And it's certainly not something you want the hottest girl in 8th grade to hear. Renee looked away, but there was definitely a hint of a pleased smirk on her face for a split second. Then I was distracted by the senior trumpeter's raging, top-volume, spit-spewing barrage of verbal abuse in my face. By the time Mr. Watrous had stopped this guy from busting me open like an overstuffed piñata, Renee was gone. I was mortified, and Annette was still kind of snorting and giggling. Which made for a fun ride home, although at least she couldn't snicker uncontrollably and bug me about my homework record at the same time. The next morning, my mom and Jeffrey returned from Philadelphia.